So picking up where we left off yesterday, we saw, just to remind everyone, we saw in the Mishnah, it talks about both the case of an Ubra Sheiricha and the case of a Chole, right? Both the case of a Ubra, whatever that is, whether it means the mother or whether it means the baby. We discussed that yesterday. We say, Machilonosa Aje Tashiv Nafsha. We feed her until she gets better. In the Gemara, we explain that means we sort of do it in stages. We minimize the Isser in terms of feeding her as much as possible. In the case of eating non-kosher, we first give a taste and then a mixture of kosher and non-kosher. And then finally, if necessary, we feed the full non-kosher. The goal is to minimize the prohibition that's done. In terms of a chole, our mission says, Machilin also al pi bekiin, vim encha mekiin, machilin also al pi atzmo, achi omar dai. For someone who's sick, we bring in bekiin, the experts, medical experts, to evaluate whether he needs to eat or not, and we feed them until achi omar dai, until they say it's enough. If there's no experts, then we go by the sick person. But there's already one difference there in the Mishnah, which is whether we follow the person who's, just if they say they need to eat. We sounds like we just from reading the Mishnah, it sounds like we do that for the mother, for the pregnant mother, but not for a sick person. Because for a sick person, you need a doctor. Unless there's no doctor, and then it's the same. That was one apparent difference from the Mishnah. We're going to see in the Rishonu today some other possible differences between how we treat an Ubra case and how we treat a Chole case. And that may bear on some larger issues also on the nature of Yom Kippur. As we saw yesterday, the Mishnah sounds like it's talking about Yom Kippur, although that's not... Not everyone agrees. The Rambam seems to say not, but it sounds like he's talking about a case of eating on Yom Kippur, whereas the Gemara brings in an additional case of eating non-kosher. Fine. So we'll start with the rush on Yoma, as always, brings in important halachic issues that as they relate to the Gemara. We're going to see he quotes the Ramban a fair amount, both the Ramban we saw yesterday at the end of the piece. We'll see how much we repeat from that, but he also quotes the Ramban. Ramban elsewhere in Torah Sa'adam, where he talks about other parts of our sugya, and I just thought it was easier to read it in the rush. You get a few views put together. So let's jump into the rush, source number 12. Masnisin uber sheiricha machinos achetashiv nafsha chole machinos al pibekiin vimeinchem bekiin machinos al piatzmo achiyomar dai. That's our Mishnah. He quotes the Mishnah, and then he quotes part of the Gemara uber sheiricha bazar kodesh b'sar chazir tochun akush. And he translates, what's a kush perish plach bilaz spindle? Or you put a little spindle, a little stick. Berotev machnis nesoch pia, im nisyash vedata muta, vim lav mevin larotev atzma. You first give her a little taste of the cooked non-kosher dish. If that's not enough, you give her the rotev, the sauce. Im nisyash vedata muta, vim lav mevin shuman atzma. If not, she eats the fat of the pig itself. She'ein lecha and that's all reading the Gemara with a little perish thrown in. So now he's going to jump into the question of whether we're talking only about Ubra case or also about a Chola case. And the Rush says, V'lav davka Ubra. We're not only talking about a case of a pregnant woman. Ela hu adin kol adam. In any case where someone has this heiriach situation, where someone smells something, someone needs to eat, kol adam sheiriach macho misaveh, Upanav mishtanin misukanu. Anytime someone smells something, they feel they need to eat it on Yom Kippur or otherwise. Misukanu, they're in danger. The implication is their need to eat shows that there's some sort of danger. Umachilin also alpi atzmo o alpi baki. We feed them based on either what they say or on based on the doctor. The Gemara is going to have more details on the precisely how we do that. If there is a doctor, if there isn't a doctor around, etc. And he has a proof to this idea that having a craving can be dangerous, not just for pregnant women, but for anyone. And he has a proof from the Gemara, Amemer Marzutra Rav Ashi, Havayasvia Pischa Debe Dunger Malka. Amemer Marzutra Rav Ashi were sitting by the doorway of the house of Dunger, the king. Chalif Ve'azil Adunger Malka, Demalka, they went to the king. Chazar Rav Ashi Lamemar, Dechivra Ape. Rav Ashi saw that Amemar's face was pale. He saw he looked pale. Shakal betzba'asei v'anach le bepume. He took his hand and put it over his mouth, meaning he didn't deal with the issue. He didn't tell this king that they needed to eat something. in the case. Varmalei Rabbanan, my time must smachta anisa. You rely on a miracle by not asking for food when a Amemar clearly wasn't feeling well because his face was pale. You're relying on a miracle. We don't rely on miracles. Why'd you do that? Amar chazina l'ruach tzaras the kaparcha ilave. He said, no. I knew a Amemar wasn't really having an episode where he needed to eat. He wasn't really sick. He just has tzaras. He has has tzaras. That's why he's pale. He's not pale because he's starving. He's pale because he has tzaras. He didn't need to eat right now. Shma mina, we see from this story, dekichiver ape chashina sakanta. In a case where a person's face becomes pale, any person, not just a mu'beres, but any person whose face becomes pale, we worry about sakana in that case, and we have to make sure that they eat, even on Yom Kippur. Of course, this was the exception. The one exception is if the person has tzaras. But usually, if a person's pale and doesn't have tzaras, that counts as sakana. It goes, next couple lines we can skip, goes into all sorts of details about different foods and how it works, but it ends, called the milsa, called the isle recha, the isle kiyuha. Anything that has a smell and has a certain sharpness, that's the way of treating that situation. Fine. And so then that's his view, right? The view of the Rush here is that this idea of heiricha, ubra sheiricha, it's not just about ubra, anyone. It's anyone who's meiriach, we feed them on Yom Kippur, right? So you might have said this is a particular thing for an ubra, a different medical condition that only applies to pregnant women. The Rush seems to say not. The Kasav Ramban, Mistabra, Hadetochvin la kush, Hani mili, beubra, She'ein lanu omed b'yishuv data, Pa'amim misyasheves b'kush b'rotev, U'pa'amim tzricha l'shuman atzmo. Aval chole, She'machilin oso, Al-pi b'kiin, Machilin oso, Davar atzarech lo, U'kidei atzarech lo, K'mo she'amru harofim. Ve'ein medakikin alav, Al-yidei kush v'rotev, El-achilo hakal hakal. So the Ramban, even though he says the Ramban agrees to what the Rush said before, he agrees in the general principle that there is such a thing as being meiriach, even if you're not an ubra, right? Even beyond the case of pregnant women, there is such a thing as smelling food, having a craving for food, and you need to feed that person to make them well. But the Ramban says there's a different distinction between an ubra and a chole, a non-pregnant chole. And the difference is whether we do this idea of giving them a taste and then giving them just the sauce and then having them actually eat the food. And as we just read, the Ramban says, the ein lanu omed b'yishuv data. In terms of a pregnant woman, it's harder to assess what would be sufficient for yishuv das, for calming or for making her healthy again. Right? It's impossible to assess that. Whereas for a chole, it is possible. So whereas for a chole, you just ask the doctor. The doctor says, eat A, B, and C, and then you're good. For a mu'beres, we sort of have less clarity on that. And that's why we have this process, right? And again, that seems to come out of our Gemara, right? Our Gemara talks about this process of first feeding a little bit and then more and more, a taste and then the sauce and then the food. It only says that about a mu'beres. It doesn't say that about a chole in general. So even though chole in general, you might have said chole doesn't have the whole idea of being meiriach, right? But the Ramban doesn't say that. The Ramban and Rush don't say that. A chole, any person can become sick through this being meiriach situation, can need food to eat. But the difference is that only a mi'uberes is in such a case that we can't estimate, and that's why we do this process of trying a little bit and then a little bit more. But for a chole though, we ask the doctor what they need and we feed them, and it's a lot easier to estimate that. So that's the difference, right? This idea of mi'uriach applies, but the way it applies is slightly different. Fine. V'garsina v'krisus perak amrulo hitirula l'ubra lecho pachos. And he says, but still, and we're going to see this sugya later on, we still do hakal hakal, meaning we still do this idea, instead of feeding something that's super treif, let's say in terms of not Yom Kippur case, in terms of the eating non-kosher case, instead of feeding something that's an iser kares to eat, we feed something that's an iser lav, right, a lower level prohibition. We still have that for a chole, but we don't have this idea of a taste and then more to eat, because that's not really necessary, right? A doctor can know exactly what's necessary, but hakal hakal still applies, that we want to minimize the violation that we're doing. Yes, Dvorah.
So on the Ramban differentiation between the chola and ubra, why do we assume that the ubra can't be assessed by a doctor?
So it sounds like that wouldn't be helpful. I mean, I don't know the exact medical assumptions that the Ramban is making. I think the Ramban was a doctor. I don't know exactly what medical assumptions he's making, but it sounds like the Ramban thinks the way that being Meiriach works is somehow different, and therefore it can't be estimated. I mean, that's what he says, right? Ein lanu omed biyishuv data. Now, it's possible that this is not just a medical point. It's possible that he also read that into the Mishnah, because as we said before, the Mishnah does have this distinction between mentioning, the Mishnah only talks about an ubra with the idea that she can tell us, right? She decides whether she needs to eat or not. It doesn't seem to mention doctors at all. Whereas for chole, it doesn't mention heiriach for other people. But for chole in general, and by extension, a chole or a person who's meiriach, who's not pregnant, we do bring in doctors, right? So I guess the Ramban assumes that the case, again, either on medical basis or on reading the Gemara basis, that the case of a chole sheheiriach is more comparable to the normal case of chole rather than the case of an ubra sheheiricha, right? That's, yeah.
I guess I would just ask, like, today, when we know that doctors probably can assess how much she needs to eat, like, would we jump straight, or do we still do the, like, bit-by-bit process?
Right, so the tricky thing with understanding this today is, I mean, I think, I'd say today's doctors generally don't think of being meiriach as a medical condition, right? Either you're hungry or you don't have enough fluids, or you don't have enough food, or whatever it is, or you feel faint. So like feeling faint is maybe the closest thing. But on all these things, it's like, the qualifications we're thinking about dehydration are different than heiricha, right? Having a craving may indicate that you're dehydrated, or that you're hungry, or you're faint, or you have low blood sugar or something. But we don't use these criteria anymore. It's an interesting question. How exactly do you translate that? I think there's so many things to translate. Practically, I think we generally treat ubra just as a chola in the general sense. I'd say because, assuming, as we read in the Ramban, that there are these medical distinctions, those don't seem to apply nowadays, right? We seem to have the capacity to evaluate what a pregnant woman's, situation is, certainly better than it sounds like the Ramban had the ability to do. We do it in that way. That's not super helpful, but I don't know if there is a super helpful answer. Just there's so many things that have shifted medically that it may be hard to translate like one-to-one from this Ramban quoted by the Rush to our halachic practice. Yeah, Rivka.
I'm just curious if we could read the Ramban a little differently. We were like debating in Chavruta whether this was possible, where the Ramban says like honey mealy ubra, and then says aval chole. And we were wondering if you could read the like honey mealy ubra as like ubra being an archetype of like the like meiriach case, whereas chole is sort of a normal chole who's chole because of some other thing, or whether that's not a plausible reading.
I mean, I think it sounds like he's putting all cholim together, meaning, that's an interesting question. It sounds more like, meaning once we have a couple lines earlier, v'chein kasav harambanzal, that the Ramban agrees to what the Rush had said, that there can be meiriach for anyone, and then he still comes in and says, hani, for the Ramban, hani mili ubra. It sounds like the distinction is between ubra and chola as people rather than a scenario of heiricha versus not. I hear what you're saying. It may be possible to read it. It feels like the less likely reading given how everything's laid out here. But it's worth thinking about. If I have a chance, I'll try to look back in the Ramban that's being quoted and see if it's clearer there.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we have our distinction. We have the Ramban both saying that this idea of being meiriach applies to other cholim, but it applies differently. And in general, cholim are always evaluated based on they always get an answer how much to eat, and that's it. Whereas while we do say hakal hakal, we say to eat the smallest isser possible. We don't say to eat a little bit and then a little bit more and see what they need. Whereas for Mu'beres, presumably because it's harder to evaluate, as the Ramban says, you do it one step at a time, but that's only for Mu'beres. Fine. And he continues, V'garsini v'krisis perak amrlo hitir la l'ubra lecho pachos pachos mikashir v'pnei ha-sakana. U'parich v'pnei ha-sakana v'afilu tuvanami techol. Right, it says we allow a pregnant woman to eat less than a shear in a case of danger. That's the sugya there in Krisis. Why not eat the full shear? If she's really in danger, sakana, you're allowed to eat. Amar papi halki amar, hitir la l'ubra lecho pachos pachos mikashir k'desh lo yitztarif l'kizayis b'chdei achilas pras. V'chen kasa ba'alachos. There's this idea of pachos pachos mikashir, right? It's similar to hakal hakal in certain ways. It's that instead of eating a full shear, a full whatever it is, a kakoseves, the size of a date on Yom Kippur, instead of eating that much, you eat less than a shear and wait a few minutes and then eat less than a shear again in order to not violate the full isser. This actually comes up earlier in our parak, the beginning of the eighth parak of Yom, we have a whole discussion. Chatzis shear. It's machlokas Riochan Reish Lakish, whether chatzis shear is asur min haTorah or not. We paskin like Riochan, chatzis shear is asur min haTorah, but it's asur on a lower level. It's only an isur lav, not an isur kares. Usually, eating on Yom Kippur is an isur kares, eating or drinking, whereas eating less than a shear is only an isur lav. So that's why it's less chamor. So in similar, this idea of pachos pachos mikashir, it's a subset of hakal hakal, and we apply that by a pregnant woman who needs to eat on Yom Kippur. And v'nira, the Ramban says, she'af b'chole osin kain. Presumably, anyone who's sick on Yom Kippur, they do less than a shear. And we apply this. This is practically applied. If someone is sick in such a way that they can be helped, they can, you know, if let's say there's an issue with being dehydrated, but if they have 2 ounces, whatever it is, 2 ounces or 1.5 ounces of water every 10 minutes, they'll be fine. So that's what we do. That's the psak. If you can do that successfully, you do that instead of drinking the full shear. That's how we paskin based on this Gemara and then the Rush here, right? That be'afichol osin kain k'dei l'hakel me'alav me'isr kares u'malkos le'isr bilvad adkan. Or sorry, the Ramban quoted by the Rush that pachos pachos mikashir, just like hakal hakal, we apply that by Yom Kippur in all cases in order to minimize the violation. Now we're going to get into this more when we focus more on the idea of hakal hakal, but there is a principle or a big hakira, a big question about pikuach nefesh in other contexts, whether it's what we call hutra or dechuya, right? Whether let's say in the context of Shabbos, there's a whole machlokas, right? We violate Shabbos to save someone's life, but is that hutra or dechuya? Do we do that like sort of the isser goes away, like there's no violation of Shabbos at all in saving a life, and just do whatever you need? And it doesn't really matter what you end up doing if you're in the process of saving a life. Or do we say dechuya? It's sort of pushed off, meaning it's still usher to do what you're doing. We override that, so practically you can do what you do, but we minimize the prohibition wherever possible in order to make sure that you're violating as little as possible. Right? That's the idea of dechuya. So there's a whole question as to whether violating Shabbos is hutra, to save a life, is hutra or dechuya. But it seems pretty clear from what we just read that in terms of violating Yom Kippur, it's dechuya, right? That's why we have this idea of hakal hakal. We have this idea of pachos pachos mikashir. Maybe also the idea of having tasting a little bit and not eating more. Although that may be different. Generally, we seem to want to minimize the degree to which you violate Yom Kippur to save a life. So that's why we apply all of these limitations. Presumably, that indicates it's dechuya. Yeah, Nettie.
Why would there be a difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur in, like, if it's Hutra or Dechuya?
I guess part of that, there's different ways of, it's like a huge sugya. One of the ways of saying it is to what extent the Heter is built in to the Isser. Meaning, let's say by Shabbos, to give an example, and this is by no means the only way to do it, but this is one way one might do it. If you think Shabbos it's permitted to violate Shabbos because Chal Shabbos Achas, right, to violate this Shabbos so you can keep more Shabbos, is you might say that's an internal consideration in Shabbos. And when it comes up that there's someone's life is in danger, Shabbos, as it were, sort of, you know, takes a step back and says, okay, pikuach nefesh, it's all yours. I'm not relevant here. Whereas in other cases, let's say eating Yom Kippur, there's no, the heter of eating Yom Kippur is, you know, to save a life, v'chai behem, whatever exactly it is. You might say that's an external factor, and that clashes with the prohibition of eating on Yom Kippur. It happens to be pikuach nefesh wins out, but there's still that tension, so you still minimize. You might say that. It might depend on the nature of the isser.
Okay. Is the reason that we would apply, like, the logic of Chilul of Shabbos, like, only to Shabbos because it's learned from, like, a pasuk stated in regards to Shabbos? Or do we think that, like, the logic of, like, potential for mitzvos applies, like, more to Shabbos than it does to Yom Kippur? Because I feel like you could also say, like, Chilul of Yom Kippur Echad. But I guess, like, the pasuk is about Shabbos.
Yeah, the Gemara, the pasuk and the Gemara's drush is by Shabbos. So the default is to, you know, unless you have reason to extend it, we would limit it. It sounded from the Ramban we saw yesterday that he might extend it to Yom Kippur. So that's interesting. But, you know, I think the easiest way to say it is it's just talking about Shabbos, and extending it, you'd need, you'd go by V'chai Behem or some other drasha. But we'll be able to focus a bit more on the drashos later in this parak. But yeah, it's a good question, and a huge sugya. So that's at least one approach that may just depend on the context and the case. Also, there's, of course, there's Hutra Duchuya questions in all sorts of other areas, like Tuma Hutra B'tzibur, or Tuma Duchuya B'tzibur, in terms of bringing a karban when everyone's tummy, bringing carbon Pesach when the majority of community's tummy, and things like that. So there's a whole broad literature on these, all of these issues. Let's move forward in the rush. Was there another hand? Sorry, did I miss a hand? No. Okay. So let's move forward in the rush. Fine. And right, so the idea is to minimize the Isser Kares, right? And that might be another reason to distinguish, right? Maybe if a certain Isser is more Chamur, has Kares, then that may be a reason to say Dechuya. Fine. Venerli de bechola ain osin kain. Ella al pi rofe im omer shi yaspik lo laha achilo mimenu me'at me'at. V'chein be'ubra nami im ain datum yusheves bekach tzarch la'achila kishir. So this is Nerli, is the rush. The rush comes in and disagrees with the Ramban. He says that for a chola or for an ubra, we don't do this pachos pachos. We don't apply it. This could be for a couple of different reasons, but it sounds like at least in terms of pachos mikashir, we don't do that. Now, you could say that's just a practical thing, that he's worried that that won't work, right? You want to make sure the person gets what they need and they get it in time, and it slowly might not work. Or it could be there's some sort of, some sort of chilek, some sort of conceptual place where he argues, possibly in terms of hutra d'chuyah, although that would be hard, given the sugya on hakal, that we're going to get to. But at least it's worth thinking about why that might be. He then continues and essentially cites the Ramban that we saw yesterday. The Ramban about the Bahag and the Ritz Geis, that quoting them, and the implication that you do save a life for, you are Mechal Yom Kippur to save the life of the Ubar, and the whole discussion there. We'll just look at the last two and a bit lines. The Rush weighs in on this Ramban. He says, Lo yadati matzorach l'kol elu adiktukim. Ramban, look, what do you need this whole discussion about whether we're Mechal Yom Kippur to save an Ubar, to save the fetus? Lo mishkacha sakanas Ubar, below sakanas Ubra. There's no case where the fetus is in danger, where the mother's not also in danger. Below sakanas Ubar, below sakanas Ubar. Their fates are mutually tied. There's danger to the one, there's danger to the other. So this whole discussion about whether you do bikoch nefesh for an Ubar, it's irrelevant. It never comes up. Now, of course, in historical perspective, that's sort of ironic, right? Because nowadays, I think almost all cases of mi'uberes, where we'd allow the mother to eat, are cases where there's a danger to the fetus, but, you know, much less likely that there's a significant danger to the mother, given the way our medicine has developed. But at least then, the Rush was saying this isn't relevant; it's not worth discussing. And he says, "Damapels b'chaskes hasakanahi v'chem perish Rashi dem eno chelash neim mesukanim." He quotes Rashi that we saw, that if the baby's in danger, the mother's in danger, period. Now, it is possible that, you know, the Rush might say, nowadays, even though we think, practically, based on medicine, that it's possible to separate between the two dangers, you might say, halachically, we sort of define a danger to the baby as automatically being a danger to the mother. But it doesn't sound like he has, like, a super formalized idea of that. It sounds like he's more speaking practically, and, nowadays that might not be true. But in any event, he's trying to say why he doesn't think the discussion of the Ramban is really relevant. There's no nafkamina. Nowadays, there's a very significant nafkamina, it would seem. And of course, as we mentioned yesterday, the Ramban seems to be working with a different principle of pikuach nefesh, not based on v'chai behem, of saving a life, but based on chal Shabbos achas, of maximizing Shabbos's kept, which doesn't need to save a life, can even save a potential life. And the Ramban seems to say that an ubar is a potential life, and that's still sufficient for pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. Okay, so that's the Rush. So we saw there were a couple of distinctions and a couple of non-distinctions between a chole and a mu'uberes. We saw in terms of the idea of one becoming pale, it sounds like the Rush and the Ramban think that we apply that to chole, or sorry, someone who's meiriach, right, who smells something, needs to eat something. They say, seem to say that from these gemaras about faces becoming pale, that applies to all cholim. On the other hand, the Ramban seems to think that this idea of giving a little taste and then like slightly more only applies to an ubra, not a chole, because our ability to evaluate is different. And then the Ramban said that both for chole and ubra, we say pachos pachos mikashir to minimize the iser, whereas the Rush doesn't think that we apply pachos pachos mikashir, certainly not for chole. Let's move on now to the Rambam, and we'll see other perspectives on this issue. So the Rambam, we don't always read Rambams inside, but if we have a volunteer, if someone wants to read Source 13, the Rambam, they're welcome to. If not, that's also okay. Okay, go for it.
All right. Uvra shehiricha lochshin la ba'aznash sheyom hakipur hu. So we whisper into the pregnant lady that it's Yom Kippur.
And what's the Rambam saying here that's not straight from the Mishnah, that's not obvious from the Mishnah?
On Yom Kippur.
So on number one, the Yom Kippur piece, right? That's not so clear he's applying it. And also, the focus is more, this is not, I mean, that wasn't really a fair question, but the focus here is a bit more on the mother, right? Lokshin la be'azna, we're talking to the mother rather than to the baby.
And the other story, like they were whispering to the baby that it was Yom Kippur.
Right. The Rambam seems to take that story as really meaning we're talking to the mother, and that's why, as we saw on the Mishnah, the Rambam on the Mishnah, he thinks that Ubra Sheiricha means the mother as well. Right? So this is the Rambam consistently shifting the focus from the baby to the mother. Okay, so we whisper to the mother that it's Yom Kippur.
So if she cools down and, you know, she doesn't want to eat the bad food, then it's good. In love, machilino ta, ad she titya shev nasha. Then we feed her until she settles down. V'chein misha achaz bulmus. And so to someone who's like going crazy or like getting manic, machilino.
And specifically like getting a bit crazy, but around the craving, around the need to eat
for food. Machilino to ad she ya. Yeah, uru enav, until their eyes get lightened. Bafilu nevelo vishkatim machilinoto, even like tray foods and like bugs and stuff, we feed them miad right away. Ein mishahinoto adshem tadvarim hamutarim. We don't wait to find kosher foods; we give him whatever's on hand.
Right now, this case of a bulmus is a little different than the standard case of chole. Right, usually, if you have someone who's sick, they need to eat. They don't need to eat this second. A bulmus seems to need to eat. Immediately, right? So that's why we don't say akalakal. We just say whatever food you have on hand, or maybe we would say it if you had two things directly on hand, but we just give them whatever we can immediately. So that's the case. That's the Rambam on Shvisas Asor, talking about Yom Kippur. Let's compare, and the Rambam leaves out the case of a normal chole who needs to eat, right? He seems to only have case of Ubra and the case of Bulmus, but not the case of just a normal chola who needs to eat, which is interesting, and we'll hold that thought. Dvorah.
My chavrus and I were wondering why there's the Rambam doesn't say that we whisper into the Bulmus's ear that it's Yom Kippur.
Yeah. So, the Bulmus's ear. Okay, so there's, right, so I think that case would just, the assumption would be that the Bulmus is just crazed and can't be reasoned with and wouldn't help. I think that's the presumption about the nature of the disease. One could ask another question. What else is missing from this Rambam that we've been assuming until now? Yeah, Nettie?
Like the hakal hakal.
Right, or at least the... Wait, he's missing that. Sorry?
Like the kush berotev.
Yeah, the kush berotev. It's not there. It's not there. It seems to be missing from Source 13, the Rambam in Shvisas Asur about Yom Kippur. Let's move on now and read Source 14, the Rambam Machos Asuros, right, about eating non-kosher, in the case where people are sick. Does someone want to volunteer to read that one? If not, I can read it.
Okay.
Number 14?
Number 14. Go for it.
I can read. Okay. Halakha Yudalit. Ubracha Rihama Halas Sor Kigon Basar Kudesh O Basar Hazir Machilino Ta Min Hamarak. Im it Yashva Da Ta Mutav Im Lab Machilino Ta Pachot Mikeshiur. Im Loan it Yashva Da Ta Machilino Ta Asha Tit Yashav Da Ta.
Okay.
So Ubracha Riha, so a woman who heat his smells, non-kosher food, for example, not machal asur, food that is forbidden to her, for example, something that is kodesh or something that is non-kosher, we feed her from the soup, hamarak. And if that, like, satisfies her, that, like, settles her mind, good. And if not, we give her less than a shiur. And if that doesn't do the trick, then we feed her until she has her mind settled.
Okay, so what does the Rambam have here? Where does the Rambam get this from?
The Gemara.
Right, the Gemara, the Kush Berot Tev Gemara.
Yeah.
Right, but the Rambam mentions it here in the context of eating Chazir, but he doesn't mention it in the context of Yom Kippur.
Right.
So how does the Rambam get to that? So if you look... Someone, was there a hand? Sorry. If you look at, remember, our Mishnah didn't mention anything about feeding a little bit less and then a little bit more. That was only in the Gemara. And the Brisa that the Gemara quoted that talked about that was talking about eating Chazir. Now, most people assumed that this would carry over, but the Rambam doesn't. The Rambam says the Mishnah is talking about Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, we just feed them whatever they need, it sounds like. Whereas eating non-kosher food, then we do a little bit at a time to see what she actually needs. Now, why the Rambam might do that, we could have more of a discussion maybe later when we talk about Hakal Hakal, but it sounds like there's a distinction there between how he views the prohibition of eating on Yom Kippur and the prohibition of eating non-kosher food. Right, so that's pretty interesting, right? And he has a slight variation from our Gemara in terms of you don't just put a little bit on the lips. He says you taste the marak, and then instead of having the rotev, he says pachot mikashir. He sort of shifts the cases a little bit. Fine, that's interesting on a more detailed level, but we'll leave it at that. Let's continue with halacha tesvav.
Okay, the chena kolem shari avtavar sheyesh bo chometz. Is that chometz as in vinegar or chometz as in
vinegar? Chometz? Yeah.
Should I keep going?
If you want to translate.
Okay. So, and also for a chola, for a sick person that smells something that has vinegar or something like it, or that comes out of it, that these are things that are, I think, are bad for him.
Well, they're ma'ar. They sort of provoke one's nefesh. They make someone hungry. They make someone need to eat the food.
Okay.
Dino ke ubra, that is the same din as the ubra, and we allow them to eat non-kosher food. So in this, it sounds, who's the Rambam agreeing with?
The Rush.
Right, the Rush and the Ramban following him, or the Ramban quoted by him also, say that we have this idea of being meiriach. It's not only for pregnant women, it's for any chola can be meiriach. The Rambam seems to throw that in here. He didn't mention it in the context of Yom Kippur. Maybe it wasn't, whatever, wasn't relevant, but he mentions it here. And yeah, so he mentions chola here. And now halacha tes zayin.
Okay.
Literally, it means Misha Achazo Bulmus. One, someone who was grabbed by Bulmus, who was seized by this, crazed craving disorder. Yeah.
Okay, so, And it's something that is also for him. We feed it to him immediately until his eyes like light up. The Imam Hasrim of Blood of Amutar, and I guess, like, we don't return anything. What is,
so lichazer means to, like, go around looking for something. So the Imam Hasrim, we don't spend time looking for something that's kosher.
El Maharim and Mzaba, rather we, like, do quickly, like, with what's found. And we feed him slowly to the hakel hakel.
Well, so hakel hakel meaning the least severe violation. I mean, if you have different non-kosher things, you give them the least non-kosher thing.
Right, following that. Right, okay, the least non-kosher thing may ruin up. Oh, and, like, once his eyes, like, return to, like, their lightened state, like, then that's enough. But if not, then you just feed him what is referring to when it says hachamor.
More severe violations, right?
Okay, so also following that pattern of, like, a small bit versus, like, just, okay.
Right, so even though we don't have time for a bull moose case, we have to feed them immediately, we still can do hakal hakal, feed them the least severe things that we have immediately, right? We don't go looking for anything, whatever we have immediately, we give them the most kal thing we can, but then if that doesn't work, we give them more chamur things. So one thing that's interesting comparing sources 13 and 14 is that source 13 in Yom Kippur, the Rambam doesn't mention chola at all. So let's look now at some further commentaries to draw out what the Rambam means here. We'll start with Rabbeinu Manoach. Right, he starts that he's talking about the standard scenario is the Ubra who smells something that awakens her heart, makes her get vehemis ava, she has this craving for it. Both she and her fetus are in danger in that case. The din ubra misha amra tzricha ani machilan osa kechole im heiricha b'yom kippurim v'lo nakat ubra el mishum orcha demilsa. Now he throws in, as we saw in the rush, this idea of equating the pregnant woman and the chole. If she says, "I need to eat," we feed her just like we would a chole. It's not even so clear that's true about a chole. We'll have to look into that when we get up to it in the Gemara. But the point is, if the point of ubra is not different, right? The case of being meriach and feeding them on Yom Kippur, there's no difference between an ubra and a chole. That's what Rabbeinu Manoach says. And he quotes Rav Yitzchak Bar Avram, Mistavra lav davka ubra hua din leish, right? No difference between pregnant woman, a man, anyone else, doesn't matter. And he says, he proves it from the story that we saw in the rush. Fine, right? The story with the person who got sick, his face was pale. Fine. Jumping to the underline, V'hishvu chachamim din ubra sheiricha leish, Bari sheheriach. So an ubra sheheriach is like a bari sheheriach. Aval b'iser kares kiditanya ha-hacha davka ubra machilin. So that's all true in Hilchos Macholos Asuros. That's all true about non-kosher food. But if we're talking not about non-kosher food, but we're talking about Yom Kippur, davka ubra machilin. B'pnei sheregila le'estakein kishemericha tavshil ve'eno cheles. You only feed a pregnant woman if she has these cravings. Aval ish bari, a normally healthy person with no other conditions, imei riach b'yom kippurim, ein machilin oso. If he smells the food, right, and he has this craving, Yom Kippur, we don't feed them. Di bayli liasuve daite. He needs to calm down. We don't immediately assume he's sick. He has to calm down. V'tov lahachmir b'zeh mipnei haramayin. We need to be careful because of the tricksters, because of the liars. But there are people who are going to say, "Oh yeah, Yom Kippur, I'm meriach again. I'm smelling something. I really need to eat now." We don't trust people. People who, if the pregnant woman is meriach, that's a common thing. So we trust her and we say, "You can eat." Other people who are not otherwise healthy people, who we don't assume have an issue with being meriach, we don't believe them and we're not willing to risk an Isser Kares of Yom Kippur for that. So we'd say, no, take a nap or something. You'll figure it out. We don't assume that they're actually sick. So here, there seem to be two different factors that are working together. Number one, a practical difference in terms of how likely it is for someone to be Meiriach, right? A pregnant woman is much more likely to actually be Meiriach than a non-pregnant person, on the one hand. And on the other hand, the difference between Yom Kippur and Macholos Asuros. Here we seem to be assuming Yom Kippur is much more severe, much more chamor. Why? It's an Isser Kares. Eating Yom Kippur is v'nichrasa, right? You get Kares for that. Since it's more severe, we sort of raise our standards. We're more skeptical of people who claim they need to eat, unless we know this is actually a reasonably likely eventuality, a likely occurrence. So that's his differentiation, and it's, again, based on both a practical difference in how likely Meiriach is for pregnant women versus everyone else, and based on the difference between Yom Kippur and the severity of Yom Kippur and the severity of eating non-kosher. And he says, V'chein nira das harav. I think the Rambam agrees with this point. Okay, how does the Rambam agree? She'arei behalachot, behilchos machalos asuros, perek yedalid, hishva ubra she'iricha le'ishbari she'iriach. V'hacha, but here, in Yom Kippur, lo kasuv el ubra she'iricha. Now notice, he's picking up on what we saw, that chole, right, we have, in both cases, we have ubra and we have bulmus, right? People who, it's clear that they need to eat, right? Both a pregnant woman who, it's not uncommon to have he'iricha, and a bulmus who's, it's clear they need to eat right now. But a chole, the case of chole, the Rambam mentioned only in Macholos Asuros in source 14, but not in Shvisas Asur in source 13 about Yom Kippur. Why did the Rambam leave out chole? Someone who's just sick, they smell something they need to eat. Why does the Rambam leave that out in Yom Kippur? Says Rabbeinu Manoach, because it's not true. You don't actually eat if you're Meiriach on Yom Kippur. Only, you only can do Meiriach if you're a chole, a normal chole. You're not a bulmus, you're not a mubaris. That only works to say Meiriach for Macholos Asuros, not for Yom Kippur, because it's an Isser Kares. Wow. And he says, V'yesh la'achriya da'as harav, da'afil b'yom kippurim, shavin ish v'isha ubra, she'harei ubra she'iricha b'sar kodesh, dina ki ubra she'iricha b'sar chazir. Right, so he says now, we can conclude that the Rambam thinks that even on Yom Kippur, a man and a pregnant woman are equal. She'arei ubra she'iricha b'sar kodesh dina ke'ubra she'iricha b'sar chazir. Because the Rambam seems to be equating v'ochel b'sar kodesh b'kares ke'ochel b'yom kippurim. So he seems to reject this idea because eating b'sar, right, the Rambam equates and the Gemara equates b'sar kodesh and b'sar chazir. Eating a karban that you're not supposed to eat and eating pig. Now, eating a karban is an iser kares. So that should be the same as Yom Kippur. So this whole logic, he doesn't really like it. He seems to reject it. Right, he threw it out there as a possibility, and he says near Nachriya that it's not true. Dafil hachi hishva bo harav isheiriach leisha ubra sheiricha. So Rabbeinu Manoach backs off of this idea, but it's a very fascinating suggestion that he has that for isurei kares, at least the Rambam doesn't say it. He might still believe it outside of the Rambam, but the suggestion that isurei kares we don't accept meiriach except for ubra, whereas other isurim that are lower level than kares, like eating pork, we would accept a scenario of being Meiriach. Let's just quickly close with some other poskim on this issue. The Shulchan Aruch clearly writes, Ubros minikos misanos mashlius yom kippurim, that pregnant and nursing women fast on Yom Kippur generally, but uber sheiricha upanel mishtanim av bishalo amrat tzricha ani loch shalom be'azna im niskar adat v'zikaron zemutav im lav machinu sa adjadi sa shevdat. He basically paraphrases the Rambam, but with a couple of important additions. He says, a pregnant woman who smells food, and he adds, upanah mishtanim, her face changes, she looks pale. In that case, we whisper to her, it's Yom Kippur, if that works good, if not, we feed her. And like the Rambam, he doesn't mention that we feed her a little bit at a time. That's only true by Macholos Asuros. And then he says, he adds, kol adam she'iriach ma'achol v'nishtanu panav, he says, any person whose face, who smells something and their face changes, they become pale, we feed everyone. This is against the Rambam, right? Sounds like he adds in this line. The Rambam didn't have this line in Yom Kippur, in Shvisas Asor, but the Shulchan Aruch adds it in. And the Bach, a commentary on the tour, gives a little bit of an explanation. I don't think we're going to read it inside here, but the Bach notes that the tour, whereas the Shulchan Aruch clearly equates a ubra and a chole, any person can be meiriach on Yom Kippur, and we allow them to eat. Right? The Shulchan Aruch comes in and says that, which seems to be against the way Rabbeinu Manoach was reading the Rambam. The Bach says the tour actually distinguishes between an ubra and a different person who's meiriach. What the Torah says is an ubra she'iricha, if a pregnant woman smells food, we feed her immediately, right? Or we first whisper to her and then we feed her. But we don't evaluate whether her face is pale or not. Whereas, then he says, kol adam she'iriach ma'achal v'nishtanu panav. if any other person, not a pregnant person, smells food, we only feed them if nishtanu panav, if their faces become pale. Meaning, and the Bach says that this is an important distinction. The Bach says we see from here that there is still a difference between a mu'beres and a chole, in the sense that for a mu'beres, if she says she's sick, she says she smells something, she needs to eat something, we feed her immediately. Whereas a normal chole, if they say they smell something and they need to eat, we actually evaluate them and we see if their face is pale. We need an objective factor to allow them to eat. We don't just listen to what they say, whereas for a mu'beres, we do. And presumably, this is based on some of the logic that we saw in Rabbeinu Manoach, even though it's not exactly the same. But the logic is that a mu'beres, it's both more common that a mu'beres will be meiriach, and we have less reason to suspect that she's lying, and therefore we don't need an objective evaluation. Whereas in a case of a non-pregnant person who says that they need to eat something, that's a little we're a little skeptical. Maybe they're just saying it, and at least here, where it's an Isser Kares, it's Yom Kippur, we're going to need at least some objective factor. We need to see at least that their face is pale. So that's what the Bach thinks the Tur is saying. Again, the Shulchan Aruch disagrees with that. The Shulchan Aruch explicitly says, Paneh Mishtanim, he adds in the words Paneh Mishtanim, also for the Ubra. So the Shulchan Aruch actually thinks, it sounds like the Shulchan Aruch thinks that an Ubra, it's not sufficient that she says that she's Meiriach. We still also, even for her, we need an objective factor. So I think what we saw today is in a few different ways, cases where the case of Ubra and the case of Chole are either the same or different in one way or another. As we saw, various Chumras or Kulas along the way. We'll leave it at that. Next time, we will move on in the Gemara for the part that we skipped to think about the Gimel Chamuros, the three exceptions to Pikuach Nefesh, and we'll have a... we'll have two main questions that we'll ask in that context. We'll move on to that. But yashar koach to everyone, and these are the two main issues in the sugya of Ubra Sheheiricha. Number one, Ubra versus Ubar, or Meuberes versus Ubar, and number two, Meuberes versus Chole.